Today, joined by Noah Rubin, we're going to do a mailbag show. It's a bit of a weird time to be doing a show, middle of the night kind of thing when games are happening, but it worked, luckily for both of us. So we have a few questions, pre-questions. We might get some questions in the live chat, and I think we already have some. So looking forward to it. This is the mailbag show. Let's go balls deep.
I'm the type to get shit done. You the type to observe. March Madness on my speakers, but today's November 23rd. Got something loud in the blunt, yeah. I don't say what I want, yeah. Probably somewhere sunny getting tan. Foreign women in the sun, yeah.
That's all that I need. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. Got my brothers with me. Got my brothers with me. And my mama's healthy.
Welcome to the Balls Deep podcast brought to you by Fantasy Basketball International. I am Adam King. Find me on Twitter and Blue Sky at AdamKing91. Find us on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, anywhere, everywhere you consume your podcast content. Please go and find us over there. Subscribe, like, thumbs up, download, whatever you do. We are also part of the Old Man Squad at Old Man Squad on Twitter. Joined by Noah, in between blurbing, so thanks for squeezing me in.
Yeah, I mean, it's always fun to do these. It's been a little while. It's been too long, if you will. But it's only three games tonight, so if anybody else, like if you really want to go watch the Pistons play the Celtics or the Raptors play the Heat instead of watching this, like go ahead, but real Hoops fans are actually here, not watching basketball.
That's right. They are here. I'm keeping an eye on the box scores. There was a weird sort of injury update came out that Jakob Poeltl was out and then he was just playing. So that was,
great. They put in, it was a report like a few minutes after the 7:30 schedule tip off where they were like, oh, actually Poeltl is now doubtful, not out, doubtful because of back spasms, despite he wasn't on the injury report at all. So Bruno Fernando is going to start. And then 2 minutes into the game, they're like, all right, Poeltl's in. We're good. So,
yeah, weird.
It was annoying for me to have to get up two blurbs in 5 minutes, but
yeah, well, oh well. And if you'd just been a bit slower, it wouldn't have mattered because you probably could have just done zero blurbs. Yeah. Oops. Anyway, let's do these questions. I've got a few that came in earlier in the week, so we'll do these. Karan Talwa, fan of the show, friend of the show. I did a show with him yesterday. If you were trying to sell Embiid in a nine cat league, what would you be aiming for? Now I don't have Embiid. Do you have Embiid anywhere?
Just in one dynasty league.
Okay, but not in a redraft.
No, not in a redraft.
No. So would you be, well, I'm assuming if you had him in a redraft league, would you be looking to sell right now?
I wouldn't, just because in my mind, we've kind of gotten through most of the headache. Obviously, things can change. I'm not expecting him to play back-to-backs, but if you drafted him, you weren't ever expecting him to play back-to-backs. So now it's like he's at least back to playing basketball. And just like anybody else, he can still get hurt. So maybe it's not the worst time to sell, just because he actually is playing basketball. So if somebody was wanting to buy, then they'd be like, okay, I'm not having to wait on him to play. So that's maybe a pretty good time to sell. But to me, I'm like, if I've just waited this entire time, I'm not going to just try and get dump him right now, but maybe it's the smart move.
And if you were looking to sell, how low, I guess, are you going to go? Would you take a top 50 player? Would you take a top 80 player? I listened just before when I was doing some exercising, I was listening to Between Two Hoops with Dan and Kayla, and they were talking about some trades that have gone down in Yahoo recently involving Joel Embiid. One of them was Joel Embiid for Goga Badadze straight up, which I thought
that's nuts.
Interesting. Goga Badadze, Joel Embiid for Pascal Siakam was another one.
Okay. I think that's more in the realm of what's
realistic. So where would you be? I know this is purely hypothetical because neither of us have him in a redraft league, but would you take someone like a Pascal Siakam for if you had Embiid?
I think that if I were looking to sell Embiid and I had him, then Siakam or a Siakam-esque player is probably kind of in line with what I think would be fair. Cause I don't, I mean, if you can get someone better, then go for it. But I think that's, I don't know how much lower I'd be looking to go in value for Embiid, just because when he's on the floor, he's so freaking good that maybe I'd rather deal with him not playing back to backs and missing a couple other games here and there than getting a Goga Batadze who in theory could get pushed out of the starting lineup, whether or not it's the right move, when Paolo Banchero returns in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's a tough one, I guess. If you, as you said, if you drafted Embiid, you were factoring in a certain number of missed games. I had my bar at, I thought he'd play around 50 to 55. How many games have they played? 25-ish as a team? And he's played five of them, something like that?
I think they're at 22.
Still. So he's played 17. So he's played five and they have 60 games left. So I reckon I'm going to be pretty close. And that is factoring in or assuming he doesn't suffer a setback or any, because he's not going to play back-to-backs, as you said. So I think moving forward, he probably plays. If they have, oh, they have 60 games left. Sorry, not 50. So if they have 60 games left, maybe he plays 45 of those, 50, which would take him up to 55. So I don't know. We'll see. Misi, Yves Misi, what is his appeal rest of season? I just wrote an article about him, actually. A few different parts to this question, but, I mean, do you see him as someone that is going to be able to sustain 12-team value?
100%. I think he is a guy that's must roster for the rest of the year. I don't think New Orleans is – it's one thing to say that they're not going to, like, sell at the trade deadline because they're like, oh, we have so much talent, like, maybe we don't feel comfortable like selling at the deadline, but there's no way they're going to be buyers at the deadline. Like they're too far like gone at this point. They can just try and climb their way back with what they have. So Daniel Tice isn't taking any minutes. Yves Misi is going to be a starter playing bare minimum 25, potentially up to 30 minutes per game for the rest of the season. Giving you that traditional center stat line of a bunch of rebounds, a couple blocks and a really high field goal percentage and nothing else. So he's absolutely a guy that's worth rostering for the rest of the year.
I agree. And he's put trays in his, so I've just cut and pasted these from Twitter. So I'm assuming he's put what's Misi's value rest of season trays. So I'm assuming he means what's Trey's rest of season value, Trey Murphy.
Yeah.
He's an interesting one because people sort of seem to be disappointed in what he's been doing, but I think he's been fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think he is a guy that always his 9 cap value looks very good. Like his like that's just the way his game is played. And maybe a little bit better than what it actually is, but he's pretty good and the opportunity is only going to continue to increase. Brandon Ingram's gonna be out a while, Zion is gonna be out for who knows how long. So I think he's a top 75 is very safe to say, borderline top 50. I think that may be a little bit of a stretch, but for the rest of the season, just given the injuries that they have. And if they were going to make a move at the deadline, I would assume that Brandon Ingram would be number one trade target. So that would just open up more for Trey Murphy, more guaranteed minutes.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing now is sort of a flaw for him. As you said, I think top 70-ish is fairly safe and top 50. It does depend on your settings, as we always say, with your individual league. But and Zion, so if he was dropped in your league, would you be going and adding him as a stash in your IR spot? Or are you sort of, I don't know, is he just someone you're avoiding much like a Kawhi or a Joel Embiid at the moment?
I feel better about Kawhi and Joel Embiid, I think, but... I think as if I was like managing a team and I saw Zion on the waiver wire, I think it would be pretty difficult for me to not pick him up just because of what he can do when he's on the floor. Especially if I have open IL spots, but if I have a team where I have three guys that are already out for a while and I could understand not picking up Zion, but just seeing Zion Williamson on the waiver wire would just be so strange to me. I just don't know if I could just let that happen.
Yeah, it's a. I have him in one. I think one league in an IR spot, and almost forget that he's on my team because he's just been out for so long. Yeah, I don't. Much like you, I think if you saw him sitting there, you'd almost. Your reaction would be, I have to add this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But so it would probably depend on, I guess, how many IR spots do you have? How many injured players do you have? Does he fit your build? So there would be a few things, but his upside is obviously certain. It's high enough that he warrants a stash if possible. Now we've got a few because we've got a few live questions coming in as well. So let me just pick one of these. Let's do this one here. And this is an ongoing question that we get asked all the time. So in a nine category league, if we were to replace turnovers as a category, what would we replace it with? And I don't think there is a right answer to this question, but I guess from your experience, is there a preferred category that you like personally?
I haven't really tried many other things aside from just like for category leagues. I haven't tried a ton of different categories out aside from the traditional nine cat. I think 3-point percentage or free throws made or field goals made are like pretty like simple, easy ones. I feel like some of the other ones, such as like effective field goal or I always just see I never actually. It is.
Yeah, there's effective field goal percentage. There's also true shooting percentage. There's two sort of alternate percentages you can use.
I didn't want to say effective field goal percentage, and I'd actually be wrong because at this point I haven't double checked in years.
Yeah.
But anyways, I feel like those like are possible, but I don't know. It's kind of hard to find like a really good effective field goal percentage player. If that makes sense, streaming in someone that's going to have like a high 3-point percentage or that hits a lot of free throws, I guess that makes a little bit more sense. I don't know. Do you have any? Sorry, I feel like I'm just like actually doing my thinking and speaking as I do it.
Yeah, no, look, I've tried a few different things. I know with my home league, it was we just went from 9-cat to 8-cat. So we just got rid of turnovers and played 8-cat instead. And obviously I know the issues that raises are to do with matchups and you can tie 4-4. So that there is no tiebreaker there, which I'm trying to think if in that league in the final last year, it did end up 4-4. And so the team that had that finished higher won the league. I can't remember whether that happened or not. Anyway, I've also eliminated turnovers, field goal percentage, free throw percentage, and replaced it with effective field goal percentage. So it turned into a 7 category league so that we did have that tiebreaker, I suppose.
Yeah.
Splitting rebounds is another one I've seen done. And I feel like I've been in maybe one league where they did offensive and defensive rebounds. And I don't mind that one because I do think that standard nine category leagues are weighted more towards guards than bigs and that's why I go with a punt big man strategy, because if you generalize a little bit, guards are more likely to get points, threes, assists, steals, and free throw percentage, which is 5 of the 9 categories. So if you replace turnovers with splitting the rebounds, it's a big man category. So I don't mind doing that. But as I said, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. It is what it is and you just deal with it. Right, let's go to the live questions because I know you have blurbs to write and I have lunch to eat at some point. Okay, let's start with Ernest because he got in nice and early. Would we drop Gafford for Cason Wallace in a 12-team head-to-head 9 category redraft league? Soft punt threes team. Gafford, I get a lot of questions about Gafford because his role is sort of reduced a little bit with Derek Lively moving into the starting lineup. But I'm sort of still of the opinion that as long as Gafford can get around 20 minutes a night, he's worth rostering. Cason Wallace, I don't know. The Thunder are weird because it's hard to know, is Cason Wallace going to play 30 minutes, 24 minutes? Is Isaiah Joe going to play 14 minutes or 28 minutes? They just, they, other than their sort of their big four, it's anyone's guess. So I don't know. I think these players are very different as well. So do you need steals or do you need rebounds and blocks? So I probably wouldn't, but, and yeah, I mean, if you're punting threes as well, a lot of Wallace, well, not a lot, but some of Wallace's value comes from threes, whereas none of Gafford, he doesn't hit threes or even take threes. So I don't know. What would you do here?
I think the safer option is to just keep Gafford, but I'm not totally opposed to Wallace. He started five of their last six games and has been playing 30 or around 30 minutes fairly consistently. I think that the one time that he didn't was the one game that he didn't start, but he's been getting a lot of steals. So I guess it could be that as well. That's what you said. You need more steals, you need more rebounds, field goal percentage help, more blocks. And I think it just assessing the rest of your team. Obviously, Wallace is hitting a three per game and then a couple more even more recently. So Gafford's probably the safe option, but I think that if there was a time to make this move, now would be it, because you also have the two games this Saturday. Cason Wallace is playing, Daniel Gafford isn't.
Yep. Okay, how do you balance your team midseason, especially in leagues where there aren't many trades? Yeah, I'm in a lot of those leagues where trades just don't
pretty happen. Much all of my leagues.
Yeah. I feel like trades are almost the almost the rarity now. Like, well, based for me anyway, personally, there have been a few trades. I've been offered some trades. In fact, I just got offered one. I saw an email, although I don't know what league it's in. What are your thoughts on this? Like, how do you balance your team? Do you sort of, in terms of strategy, do you look to change at this point in the season, or are you happy just to go with how you drafted? Like, when is the point that you would start to panic, I suppose?
A lot of my leagues, I would look at that pretty differently. Some of the ones, like for example, with the World Cup, there's no games cap in the World Cup. So I'm like just trying to maximize my games, just streaming it as much as possible. This week, I feel like I'm using up my moves way too quickly. I streamed in Dylan Brooks the other night just to get a game played. But like with industry pickup, with having like a pretty strict games cap, like I don't even look at the categories as much until like it gets closer to the end. I'm like just trying to, because it's four games per position. So I'm like just trying to make sure I'm hitting that at the right time. And then at the end of the matchup, I kind of look more at the individual categories. So I don't know, maybe I've gone into drafts with a punt strategy and then just kind of forgotten about it and just take it matchup by matchup, which may not be the worst thing, because your matchup is going to potentially change the categories that you win just on who you're going against. But I think trying to do trades, or if trades are offered to you, I'm not opposed to taking them. I think I've only accepted one trade in a redraft league this year, and it was a points league. I got Tyler Hero and Josh Hart for Jaren Jackson. It was offered to me. I was like, yeah, sure, I'll take that. But yeah, it might just be trying to scour the waiver wire, find out who could be a long-term ad.
Yeah, I usually punt so hard that I can't change my strategy. So if it doesn't work, I'm stuffed. And that has happened in one league this year just with injuries. But the rest I'm all okay with. So I can just continue to stream in guys that fit my build. So the trade that I was offered, it's actually in a dynasty kind of really deep keeper league. And I do wonder sometimes whether people I'm in this league. It's not a league that I run. I was just asked to be in it. So I'm in it. And I do wonder whether people realize that I do know a little bit about fantasy basketball, because some of the trades that I get, and this one, and look, maybe I'm wrong to shoot this one down so quickly. You're the dynasty expert. But I was offered Jake LaRavia and Kyle Filipowski
for
Jalen Johnson.
Yeah, no. No, no.
No.
No. Okay. I wouldn't do that.
No.
I think you're good.
Yeah, okay. Good.
That's one of those ones that you counter and just ask for their entire team. Like that's...
Yeah, I'd have to go and have a look at who's on his team. But I also don't have a good roster. It's a team I inherited. And so Jalen Johnson is probably my best player. I don't include Dyson Daniels in that because he is clearly my best player in every league that I have.
Wow, but, you have both of them? That's a squad. That makes me happy.
I do have both of them, yeah. Okay, so let's see. Okay, I like this one here. So how do we rank Pertl versus Kessler if you're already the number one blocks team? Well, yeah, you probably are if you got both of those guys. So I guess just purely looking at Pertl versus Kessler rest of season, I don't know. Pertl, I do worry a little bit about Pertl in terms of where the Raptors are headed. Same could be said about the Jazz, though, because I think both teams are probably headed for the Cooper Flagg sweepstakes, if they're not there already. So I don't know. Kessler's been really good this season. The minutes are way up compared to last year. If we're just looking purely at blocks, Kessler is, I think he would be quite clearly ahead of Pertl this season. I'd have to double check the numbers, but I feel like Pertl has been good, but he's actually getting a lot of his value from other categories this year.
Yeah.
Whereas Kessler is a lot more reliant on just blocks. I could be wrong. I'm just bringing up the...
It is, and high field goal percentage as well.
Yeah.
I think Pertl's a little, like, almost three assists, and obviously Kessler isn't giving you anything there, so that bumps it up a little bit. Pertl is still bad at free throws, but hasn't been quite as bad as it's been in the past. And I think his steals are a little higher.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. Yeah. So I've just pulled it up here. Yeah. So Walker Kessler is basically averaging 11 and 11 with three blocks. And Pertl is giving us 16 and 11 and a half with only 1.3 blocks. So Kessler's basically double the value of Kessler here in blocks. But he also has 1.1 steals, as you said. So he is getting those defensive stats on both steals and blocks. So I guess if we had to pick one rest of season, if you're already the number one blocks team, maybe you go with Pertl because he's helping you a little bit in steals, a little bit in assists, more in points. I think when we get to the end of the season, Kessler might be the higher ranked player just because anyone who averages three blocks a game is going to be a top 50 player, basically. So I'd be okay with probably going Pertl here because I think he does a bit more across the board. What do you think?
Yeah, I think this is almost more just like a team philosophy question, just because if you're giving up Kessler, you might not be the number one team in blocks anymore. Obviously, getting Pertl would help you be stronger. Or I don't know if this is like a I have one of them and I'm trying to get the other, or if it's like I currently have both and looking which one to trade. I'm assuming it's the latter, but I think if Kessler's really helping you be that number one team, whereas Pertl's helping a little bit, but it says I have Pertl and I'm the number one blocks team and I can trade for Kessler. Okay. You see that second comment there, but
yeah.
Okay, yeah, I mean, if you're already the number one blocks team, then I don't see a need to trade for Kessler.
That'd no.
be my way of looking at it.
No, I don't think so. If you're already number one, obviously getting Kessler would really make you number one. But, yeah, if you're already up there, then I'd be okay. Because, I mean, you could even argue that Pertl's blocks are down a little bit. He's only at 1.3. He was at 1.5 last year. 1.2 the year before that, 1.7 the year before that. So there is scope for him to get up closer to 1.5. We can't count on that. I'd be okay with sticking with Pertl here. Another center question, Matt Carmody. Who would you prefer to roster, Robert Williams or Donovan Klingon? Both are questionable for tomorrow. That has, I've got the injury thing up here that's just popped up. That they are, and surprise, surprise, DeAndre Ayton is also questionable. So whenever anyone comes back to take his minutes, he just goes and sleeps on a funny bed or jams his thumb in a door or, I don't know, goes and kisses everyone until he gets sick. So,
oh my goodness. Yeah,
people know I'm not an Ayton fan in terms of his attitude. And if you have a look, it's very, I mean, it's probably purely coincidental, but he came back from injury when both Williams and Klingon went out. And now that they're back, he's questionable. It's interesting. Anyway, that's not the question. The question is, would you rather Robert Williams or Donovan Klingon? Do you have a preference?
Yeah, I feel much better about Klingon. I think given Williams' injury history. Now, you could look at it as Klingon was able to return in 2 weeks from a knee sprain. Robert Williams was out for 2 weeks with a concussion. And obviously, those timelines are pretty different typically. Mm. So hopefully they're not rushing Klingon back. That's my one fear there, is that they're just pushing him back to the lineup and he's not ready and it could get hurt again. Like, I hope that's not the case. That'd be my one fear there. But given Robert Williams' injury history and the fact that, like, he's already not going to play back-to-backs for sure, I feel better about Klingon.
Yeah, I do too. I think if we're looking at this in a vacuum of, okay, both are healthy, both are playing, I don't know, 22 minutes a night, I think Williams maybe has a slightly higher per minute just because I think he does a little bit more in other categories. But I'm much more confident in saying that Klingon is going to – his role will increase as we get closer to – because they're another team that are going to be in those – in the Cooper Flag sweepstakes. So – and Klingon has, I know, did you bring this up on the show with Raph and Dan the other day?
I was actually just about to go find
Klingon's numbers. He was averaging like 15 rebounds and he was the only three players who have ever done it or something.
It's, hold on. It's per 75 possession stats.
That's right.
He's averaging 14.2 rebounds, 1.1 steals, and 4.6 blocks. He's one of three players to do that, but the other two were both on the 98-99 Kings and played like five total minutes. So it's basically he's the first player to ever do it, and he's doing it as a rookie, which is pretty insane.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, he's been quietly, but before the injury, very good. Like, people were a little bit frustrated with the minutes and timeshare and then Rob Williams coming back into the equation and that sort of thing. But I've got him in at least one league, if not two. And if you look at his numbers before he went down, as you said, the blocks are where his value. He had an 8-block game. Basically, the last, five games he played, he had 3, 2, 2, 3, 8 blocks, double-digit rebounds basically every night. So, yeah, I like Klingon rest of season here. Okay, what else have we got? Let's talk about Rozier, I guess. Is Terry Rozier worth grabbing with all the Jimmy Butler rumors? Seems like they don't even use Rozier. They don't use him a lot. He's been very disappointing. I'm just pulling up because I've got the box scores open for tonight's game. So we're almost at halftime and Terry Rozier has 3 points in 11 minutes. Would Rozier be someone, if he was available on your waivers in a standard league, would you grab him? Or do we think he's done?
I don't want to just say he's never, like, it could happen where he kind of figures things out. Like, he's obviously been a very good fantasy player for a little while now. And I think a Jimmy Butler, I'm not even sure how much a Jimmy Butler trade helps, just in the sense that if, like, I think some of the teams are like the Suns, the Rockets, the Warriors. Like, if it's a Warriors trade, you're probably getting back three prospects or like younger players like a Moses Moody, Brandon Pajemski, Jonathan Kaminga, somebody like that. And those guys are just going to take up more minutes, more shots. So it's not like a Jimmy Butler trade is going to open up a ton of minutes for any of these guys. So I don't know. Rozier isn't a guy that I'd be looking to add right now, but I don't want to rule it out that, like, he won't have any value for the rest of the season.
Yeah, he's a tricky one because we've seen him put up top 50 numbers. We know he can do it, but he hasn't looked good since he arrived in Miami. I think if I was comfortable enough in the standings and I could just take a bit of a flyer, I might just pick him up and leave him on my bench for a week or two and see if things turn around. Yeah. But I also don't think we're going to get top 50 Rozier anytime soon. All right, here's a trade question. I can trade Poeltl and OG Anunoby for Şengün. 18-9 cat. OG's stocks are crucial for my team build. So is this trading away Poeltl? Oh, yes, it is, because this is, yeah, Adam, who had Poeltl. So this is trading away Poeltl and Anunoby. Yeah, look, you're taking a pretty significant hit in steals and blocks there because both players, I feel, are averaging at least one steal and one block. Is Anunoby averaging a block? He'd have to be close. Spell his name properly. That would help. Poeltl is, because we just talked about Poeltl, averaging 1.2 and 1.3 or something. Why didn't that load? Anunoby. Okay, Anunoby is averaging, yes, 1.6 steals and 1.2 blocks. So you're losing, 5 to 6 defensive stats, and you're getting Şengün, who gets maybe a steal and a block, probably not close to. So you're taking a hit, but obviously it's one player for two. I would assume if it's an 8-team league, yeah, the waiver wire is stacked. So I'd probably be okay with that. I think Şengün has looked pretty good, and he's going to play big minutes rest of season. I think that's fair enough. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a move I'd be looking to make. Obviously, you do kind of lose out on a little bit, but if the waiver wire is stacked, maybe you can help make up for some of that with somebody that's there. Because it is an 8-team league. So I think I'd be prioritizing getting as many stars as possible. But then you might just be pivoting your strategy a little bit. It could be that you're a little bit less concerned about the stocks. And because you're getting in a guy like Şengün that's stronger in some other categories, you can feel a little bit better. So it could be something like that. But in general, I'm always in favor of being the team that's getting the one and the two for one deals, especially if there is somebody on the waiver wire that would be helpful.
Okay, Steve asks, is it more important to nail your top five picks in a draft or nail your last five flyers? I don't know. It's a tricky question. For me, I think if you stuff up in your first 4 to 5 rounds, I think that can obviously have a more significant impact on your team. So if you took Embiid, for example, at pick 9 this year, you're probably stuffed because currently you would be towards the bottom of your standings, I would think.
Yeah.
So I do think it is probably important to, I don't know if I'd say nail your top five picks, but I think it's important to not blow your top five picks.
Yeah. I think that's a good way of putting it. Like if you mess up one of your top five picks, it's probably hurting you more than messing up your late round flyers. But if you're nailing five late round flyers, then like, I mean, I don't even know like what that would look like this year. Maybe it's like you got Josh Hart and Dyson Daniels and I don't even know a couple other guys. I don't even know exactly what other late round flyers have been like definite hits to that level. But if you're getting a few of those guys.
Yeah.
And you didn't totally screw up your first five picks, then maybe you're probably sitting pretty.
Yeah, I think so. I think, as I said, I think with your top five, it's if you're not sure, I would err on the side of caution and go, okay, I know, I don't think you might be picking it, I don't know, pick 36 and maybe you're looking at, I don't know, if we think back to the draft this season, I don't know, say you're picking at pick 40 and DeMar DeRozan is there and you sort of go, I don't think he can really be any better this year? Do I take a risk on someone who hasn't been a top 40 player before, but I think could get there? Maybe you just err on the side of caution. Go, okay, look, I'm going to go DeRozan because I know he's just going to be who he is. Whereas once you get to the beyond, I don't know, pick 80, pick 90, you start taking those flyers. Mm-hmm. Whereas, yeah, if you took someone at pick 40 and they ended up being outside the top 100, then you're in trouble. And yes, Dyson Daniels, very good example of a late round flyer.
Oh yeah. Did anybody talk about that this offseason about making sure to have Dyson Daniels as a late round flyer?
Not that I heard.
I don't know anybody. Yeah. No. Kind of went under the radar. Sneaky.
It did. All right. What have we got? Let's do one or two more and then I'll let you go and I'm going to go as well. I mean, you can see the questions. Are there any in here that you want to? You're one of the few guests that can actually see the behind the scenes.
Let's see. I think maybe, I mean, I'm always happy to talk about Devin Vassell.
Yeah, we can talk about Vassell.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did see that one down there.
Oops. Hold on. I know how to do this. There we go. I was like, it didn't show up, but now we're good.
So Devin Vassell has improved every year. Do we think he will be top 60 after he fully ramps up in a 9-category league? So do we think Vassell can get to being a top 60 player? I do. I do think that the Spurs are going to be cautious with him. You could argue that they've potentially won more games this season than they want to win. They might be better than they want to be. But we do have so I just saw someone on the Spurs.
Stephon Castle is out.
Castle is out, yeah, tomorrow. So could Vassell move back into the starting lineup finally, maybe? Or Sohan could come in there as well. I think both should at some point move back in. But, yeah, look, I think Vassell can be – I still view him, if I was in a dynasty league or whatever, I would still view him as a top 50, top 60 player.
Yeah, I think the management of him, not that it's been bad, but it's just been kind of annoying for us because obviously they're prioritizing his long-term health, which is a great thing because they're not very good right now. But hopefully they're competitive within like 2 years and he can play a lot more and they won't be quite as cautious with him because he is really freaking good when he gets to play a lot and he hasn't even really got the chance to play a full role this year. Like he hasn't played 30 minutes in a game yet. And he's 85th in 9-cat. Top 60, I think, is pretty easy. I'm trying to remember if I was actually looking at the numbers or just looking at the fact that he's only played 24 minutes per game. But I was talking with Dan Vespers on his show about Vassell being a buy low right now. Mm-hmm. And it is just really a great chance to do that, especially if he ends up going back into the starting lineup in their next game. Like, this is the last minute possible to buy low on Vassell, because if he gets to the point where he's back in the starting lineup consistently playing 32 minutes per game, like, yeah, I think top 50 is probably more realistic.
Yeah. And I do think he will get there. I know he's been injured, but there's no indication that the Spurs have soured on him as part of their long-term future. Like, this is purely just, he's had a few injuries. So we're going to be really cautious. And the fact that they are being so cautious might actually tell us how highly they view him, because they are taking it easy. They want him healthy when it matters, which is next year, year after that. All right. Do you want to pick one more and then I'll let you go? What have we got here?
I mean, this one's pretty quick, and then we can do, like, so I guess, like, the last two, I'll just pull this one up. The rule on how many players in the same team. Do you, that's not something I ever think about when I'm drafting, or if I'm, I never think about, oh, I'm getting too many players from one team.
I usually don't. It's not something that's sort of front of mind when I'm drafting.
Yeah.
I would say, is there a threshold or something? I wouldn't want more than three, I don't think, just for scheduling and that sort of thing. But I wouldn't. I think I had a question similar to this. I don't know what show it was on, but I also wouldn't use it as an excuse to not draft a player. So, mm-hmm. like in a draft, like Brunson, OG, Bridges, for example, because you can always trade. Like you could, if someone is clearly in your mind the best player available, but you have two players from that team, I would still draft them because you could trade one of them at some point. Someone could get injured. Like you just, it's so hard to predict what's going to happen in the NBA, as we know. So usually, no, I don't have a rule as such. If I finished drafting my team and then went, oh, I've got four guys playing for Denver or something like that, I might say, I might just try and move off one of these guys. But yeah, it's not a, I don't think it's a priority for me when drafting.
Yeah, I think it kind of depends on, like, I'm not trying to do this. And then it's, if I'm getting this many players from the same team, then I'm probably drafting them where they should be drafted or potentially even later. And it's good value. So I'm fine with it. Like there are only a handful of teams where I feel like I'd be very happy having four of their guys on my fantasy team. Mm. And even more than that. So I guess I would say if I were like, it would just never happen for me to get four or five players from the same team. I just don't think it would ever happen.
Yeah. And look, I mean, you could also view it as if you are drafting three players from the same team, you're almost, I know we don't use this term a lot in fantasy basketball, but it could almost be viewed as a handcuff because if one of those guys gets injured, mm-hmm. especially with the Knicks, because they only run a seven-man rotation or eight-man, if someone was to go down, like if Bridges was to get injured, not that he ever gets injured, but if he was, OG and Brunson both have to do more. So you are, in a sense, handcuffing, which, again, it's not a term that's very common in fantasy basketball, but that is a way to view it. So I have Dyson Daniels and Trae Young in a ton of leagues this year. I've got both of them. When Trae doesn't play, which happened earlier in the season, that was when Dyson had that 28-point game or whatever it was. I didn't draft for that purpose, but I've seen already that when Trae is out, Dyson needs to do a lot more offensively. So that sort of worked out. Was this the next question you wanted to do, the last one?
Sure. That's good with me.
Who do we think are some good sell-high targets for Io and Goga? So if you were trying to sell Io to Sunmu at the moment, I guess where do we view them long-term? I see Io to Sunmu as sort of a top, probably best case top 100, top 90 maybe, and Goga... Goga, the guys like this are an example of when rank isn't necessarily reflective of value because Goga hurts you in certain categories, but then he's very good in others. So I think I probably view Goga as a top 80, but again, we don't know what his role is going to be once Franz and Paolo are back. Are they going to keep him starting? Because someone's going to have to go to the bench and it's either going to be Goga Badadze or Wendell Carter. Do you think, I mean, this isn't the question, but what do you think happens there? Do they stick with Goga as the center and move Wendell Carter to the bench? Could that happen?
I think the fact that when Wendell came back, they didn't go ahead and make that move was a little bit eye-opening to me because that would have been an easy time for them to move Goga back to the bench, but he's playing so well, and obviously Paolo still being out changes things. But that was when I was kind of like, oh, maybe they would continue to start Goga even when Paolo and Franz are back because he's been better than Wendell this year. He's been having a very, very good season, and Wendell's been kind of frustrating for a couple of years now. So I don't know. I think that the next couple of weeks will probably be a good evaluation for both of them, and they can kind of – they won't cross that bridge until they have to. But I think that there's definitely a chance that Goga still starts. But the frustrating thing about starting in Orlando, which is what we've seen from Wendell the last couple of years, is that there's still Mo Wagner there and then the other big, whichever one doesn't start. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to kind of keep an eye on because I don't really know what's going to happen. I'm excited to see.
Yeah, and it's a good problem to have for Orlando. For sure. Not for fantasy. It doesn't help us at all.
Nah.
But yeah, much like you, I was never that move of bringing Wendell Carter in at the four and starting him alongside. I don't think anyone saw that coming.
No, it was weird.
It was, yeah, very out of the blue. So, all right, there are more questions, but I'm going to let you go because I've got things to do and you've got things to do. Just quick plug for yourself. Where can people find you? What have you got coming up on, well, Tank Me Later, but I know that's sort of whenever you can squeeze it in, but over at Roto Baller. Roto World. There's so many
Roto something. It's just, something. You know, just the Roto thing. That's just what. If you're in fantasy, it's Roto something, but Tank Me Later has been kind of on the back burner. Hopefully I can find time to start doing that again at some point. But at Roto World, we have the weekly Q&A that Raph and I have been doing on Tuesdays, and then Raph, Dan Titus, and I on Wednesdays do the Roto World basketball show, and that's on Wednesdays. And then I've been doing two dynasty columns per week. Last week I didn't, but I was back this week with two columns. So I talked about some guys whose values have risen and some guys whose value has fallen over the first month and a half of the year, almost 2 months. Of course, it was just a chance for me to talk about Dyson Daniels again. So
yeah. Oh, any excuse to talk about Dyson Daniels is a good one. Of course. Isn't it? I think so.
Of course. Yeah.
Because we didn't do enough of it in the preseason, so we'll continue to do it now. All right. Well, thank you for, as I said, squeezing me in. You can go back to your blurb writing now. And thank you, as always, everyone, for listening and tuning in and questions. I'll be back tomorrow. I might be back this afternoon with the post-game show, tomorrow with the pre-game show. I'll be on the Insight Fantasy Sports Network with Skiddy doing a pregame show as well tomorrow. So you'll see plenty of me if you want to, for whatever reason. that'll do for today. I'm Adam King. He's Noah Rubin. This has been the Balls Deep Mailbag Show. Until next time, catch up.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.